Warning. The following special episode of The Rufus Project has some pretty major spoilers of a major movie series. You have been warned.
Let me dig that jive some more, boy. Oh, boy. The Jim Jam Jump is the jumping jive. Make sure you get your kicks on the mellow side. Hep, hep.
Hello and welcome to the Rufus Project. You may have noticed that we used a slightly different theme song this time around. Probably should give you a quick explanation. This, I suppose you could say, is a bit of a mini cast. I had to head interstate for a week, and Christian has decided to take a break from his week-long birthday celebrations so that we can do a quick little special episode redeeming feature section. So, Christian, how does it feel to be in the intro?
Interesting, yes. It is very strange. But, hey, this is the first time for everything, and there may be many more. So thanks for having me, Trevor, to talk about an interesting subject, but I won't ruin that surprise just yet.
Yeah, that's fine. So, basically, we didn't really have the opportunity to do the separate sections. You may have noticed or worked out that we normally record things at different times and then piece them together. So this is, I suppose, a bit of a different take on the podcast to just focus on redeeming features and make that the entire podcast and attempt to do as live as possible recording. And we thought, you know what, there's plenty of movies to choose from, but to celebrate this, momentous occasion, if you want to call it that, found ourselves thinking that maybe what we should do is go for a movie that got a lot of press, a movie that had heaps of hype behind it, and a movie that ended up being a pretty big letdown to fans of the series that it relates to. We did float a few suggestions. I think Waterworld came up as one. I actually thought about that. I later thought that the latest Indiana Jones movie certainly would fit this category too, but if we are talking about massive disappointments, I think there's only one movie that we can really point to and say this was probably one of the biggest disappointments in recent cinema history. So, I say recent, but we're going to go back to 1999, look at the rather interesting entry in the Star Wars series, Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace. And I am a Star Wars fan, but I'll bring into, some of the fandom, I think, of this movie a bit later on. But Christian actually isn't that big on Star Wars, so I'm going to be very much interested in hearing what you've got to say about this one, Christian.
Oh, definitely. And I'll be coming from a completely naive, so I may come off a complete goof. But I'm literally coming from it having seen, bar the Phantom Menace, having seen probably the first 20 minutes of Star Wars, the 1977 film, and realizing I can't do this. I've tried over the years. I've wanted to for its 70s and kitsch value. I've wanted to sort of get wrapped up in its cult fandom, but I just unfortunately have never been able to see the fascination. Probably very similar to my feelings on Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy when we spoke about it a few months ago. Having then seen The Phantom Menace from start to finish, I'm probably even more confused. So I am coming from a quite naive angle. So I hope I can shed some light for some non-fans who are interested in trying it and watching the film.
Yeah, well, you probably don't need to worry about too much about being confused about it, because it confuses even long-term fans. It's interesting in that it doesn't have much in it that is actually all that relevant to the rest of the series. There's characters who are only relevant in this movie. There's whole plot lines that, again, are only relevant for this movie. I guess it's meant to be scene setting, and so that's probably one of the reasons why it falls down. I mean, it's still got that Star Wars flavour. I don't know what Christian thinks of this, but when that score kicks in at the very, very start, and you've got the, you know, in a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, that's always a good moment. That fanfare at the start of these movies is always a big plus.
Oh, definitely. I even, you know, getting that feeling of the original 70s, the films, you know, as soon as that sound and that score kicked in, you know, I'm, you know, thinking, oh, wow, maybe they have, you know, done a good job of recreating, you know, the original in this movie. But then, obviously, it starts to go downhill. But, sorry, you were going to say it's a shame.
Yeah, it's a shame because the scroll, in before every other movie in the series, the scroll's describing all sorts of exciting things. This one saying, our planet's been blocked because there's a trade dispute. Thrilling start. Thrilling.
Space-shattering. But I even felt, you know, as I said, you know, it felt so much like the original, you know, trilogy, and I thought, you know, well, I was watching it through Blu-ray, which is very fortunate because it looked so crisp and was so remastered and looked amazing. But it was all fine until these weird creatures started to appear that almost, you know, made it look so modern, and I don't know, you just saw the new technology that was coming through. So, look, I've heard rumours over the years that, you know, he waited to make these three films until more technology was available. Was that true?
That was one of the rumours that, yeah, he had this grand idea. There was apparently, he apparently did envision 9 movies to begin with. One of the stories behind this was to have it set up so that the technology could match his vision. The computer graphic animation and those creatures, I tell you what, I mean, a lot of the CGI characters were quite wooden in their acting, and that was well and truly enhanced by the CGI, just these lifeless beings. Didn't really do it for me.
Oh, yeah, just didn't have any depth to it. No, you know, I even think the same with anything computer-generated nowadays. It loses that sort of feel. And by Lucasfilm sort of, you know, I feel like they threw in, like, every possible technology that was available in 1999 almost to go, look, here we go, or even maybe trying too hard. And as a result, it did come across that they were doing that. Like, any opportunity to have something newfangled in this, I just noticed it.
Yeah, but I tell you what, one thing I did notice with this movie, with all this, cutting edge technology, the majority of the scene changes were done by basically screen wipes. Why? it's almost as bad as the Xanadu Venetian blind wipe.
Oh, look, that's exactly what I thought of too, and it almost gave it a sort of, I don't know, campy's probably not the word, but it almost gave it a real sort of tongue-in-cheek or almost a spoofy feel about it, and I'm here, we're going to tell you a story, now we're going to move on to this scene, and going back to sort of what I said before, like they were almost trying way too hard. They had these expectations that have been built up over years of fandom and all this, you know, before releasing this, and obviously we'll touch on the hype a bit later, but I just feel Lucasfilm went, oh my god, so this was really the result of a lot of stress and maybe a lot, you know, maybe too much technology, but you know, that said, you know, of all people to sort of release a film like this, it makes sense for George Lucas to have the grand epic, you know. But I don't know. I assume you saw it at the cinema, and it would have looked amazing on the big screen, you know.
Yeah, at the time, there's no doubt that it was quite impressive visuals. I mean, a lot of stuff that hadn't really been seen before. I probably did watch it slightly more brighter-eyed that very first time on the big screen. And then Jar Jar turned up.
Well, I'm thinking we might have to dedicate a small section of this to Jar Jar, but yeah, because I'm interested to ask you about his history. But actually, well, maybe we should chat about him now. I suppose it goes without saying, you can't talk about Phantom Menace without mentioning Jar Jar. Like, to me, he's almost a pop culture icon, unfortunately.
I think a redeeming feature would be to re-edit the movie so they let Jar Jar get flattened.
Well, have you heard, there is, I believe, the Phantom edit where they've gone back and cut out about, I believe, like 15, 20 minutes of the movie and virtually all of the Jar Jar scenes. And Lucasfilm actually said they enjoyed it. So that's interesting. So one of the only sort of underground sort of bootlegs to get sort of recognition. But as a character, just, I don't know, just throwing in this Jamaican accent and this cringeworthy dialogue.
Because essentially he doesn't do a lot in the subsequent movies at all. I think they realized that they try to set him up as this big main character. He ends up pretty much just being a glorified babysitter for young Anakin Skywalker through most of the movie. Once they get moving, and once the plot actually does start moving, which is probably about two-thirds of the way through the movie, But yeah, he really has no relevance. As I mentioned before, there's so much in this movie that is just for this movie, and Jar Jar is probably the poster child for that fact.
And you know, as I say, almost yeah, very iconic for the movie. But I don't know if it's iconic to symbolise the movie's badness as well. I don't know. And, you know, I've never seen the film until, you know, the last few days, but, you know, I and probably everyone I know would know who Jar Jar Binks is. So it's a, you know, he's very familiar with people, even those who don't know the movie. But, yeah, being able to see him firsthand, you know, I've seen clips, you know, but having seen the, him in the entire context of the movie, yeah, I could easily see how he could be cut out. And he tries too hard to be the comic relief, and it's just some scenes you're just cringing and almost wanting to look away.
Have him flattened by a tank.
Oh, yeah. <It's all red.
laughs> you do mention, like, you know, he is kind of this almost cult figure now. I mean, I did think of this while watching it. Not too long ago, there was Jay and Silent Bob's Super Groovy cartoon movie that came out, and, of course, that's full of references to all things geek. And there's one point where the Jay character, who has actually finally defeated a bad guy, he's tweeting about it, and he has his little brag and then goes, hashtag, hit Jar Jar with a car car.
You know, yeah, and it's just like, but yeah, but his name has just even become so, you know, symbolic and, you know, but, you know, it's almost, yeah, it almost speaks for what the movie actually means, I believe, or is like. But
it's pointless.
But did you feel that, him being toned down for the subsequent movies, it didn't make any sort of difference? And I suppose it would have made fans happy.
Yeah, it made no difference whatsoever. He ended up becoming a member of the Senate, and you see him in the background of a few movies. You see him in the background a few times. In the subsequent yeah. movies, I think he maybe has one line in episode 3. He's a much better character for it.
Yeah, I think so too. Otherwise, it just feels like they're trying too hard, like what I mentioned with earlier with the technology. But it is interesting, having not been a fan, it was good to see sort of the backstory play out. And I believe, you know, it was good seeing, like, the sort of the startings of R2-D2 and C-3PO, so it was good to see those sort of characters that you were familiar with. But you know, as a fan, did you find that it linked well? Like, do they all fit into place, you know, or are there really big inconsistencies?
Well, yeah, it's full of inconsistencies. The fact that Anakin made C-3PO is just, like, you know, and then later on you have episode 4 and Darth and C-3PO pretty much see each other early on, and there's just nothing there. It's just another robot. Going to Anakin and Darth, it's just hard to see even a young Darth Vader, a little kid Darth Vader, just going, yippee!
Oh, apparently that was cut out of the Phantom edit as well. We probably should have watched that version. But then it would have been a good movie. But yeah, he really, I don't know if it was just me, but that Anakin guy really annoyed me.
And the whole, I guess we're moving on Anakin now, the whole Anakin having no father and being full of the midichlorians. Hey, let's take the mystery out of the Force and give it a scientific explanation. Good job. You know, there wasn't a Qui-Gon thinking that he was, you know, the the one that would bring balance to the Force and be the great saviour, Jesus metaphor much?
Oh, gosh, yeah. They threw everything in, plus the kitchen sink.
Yes.
But, look, I know that we were, you know, we've mentioned that, you know, like I mentioned that's building a, you know, backstory and good to see all that, but it just felt like they were, it was dragged out so much. It was very plotting and very slow, but I think it meant it sort of took almost double the length to tell a story. It could have been half the length of time. And like that, I don't know if it was just me, that pod race went on for ages.
Yeah. You see all point? These painful, painful parts. But oh, it was quite easy. It's full of painful parts. Yeah, the pod race just kept on going. That commentator on the pod race is another one that I think would also be beneficial if he was hit by a tank. I think one of those giant tanks from the start that almost got Jar Jar should just rampage through most of this movie.
I'm sure an air can be made of that.
the Rufus side. Project edit, yes.
Yeah. But then you've got a side, you know, alongside all this, I just find it hilarious. But in all this, you've got Liam Neeson and Ewan McGregor, because I suppose with the 1977 Star Wars, you know, Carrie Fisher and you know, Harrison Ford and all these other names, you know, this was at the very early part of their career, so they were almost unknown. Sort of, it made it more exciting and more kind of real. It felt like with this newer one, with Phantom Menace, that they were just kind of like, spot the cameo. Oh, who's that there? Let's put Samuel L. Jackson in that part there. And I'm assuming they were in the sequels as well. But I just felt that was quite, I don't know, it felt strange.
It did. In fact, actually, in the pod race, there was a couple of shots, and again, for fans who have followed through, may know that Warwick Davis was one of the main Ewoks in Episode 6. Very famous actor of short stature, shall we say? But you go through the pod race, and there's shots of the crowd, and suddenly Warwick Davis. So they actually had Warwick Davis making a cameo during that pod racing scene. I did find that kind of cute. It's like,
yeah.
Hey, look at that.
I must have been a blink and a miss it for me. But there was a lot of names in there. It was almost, you know, I suppose I could almost, you know, I won't mention it yet, but I can almost add that as a redeeming feature, I suppose, as, you know, spot the cameo. And I suppose it was at the point where Natalie Portman, you know, future Oscar winner, was kind of at the period where her career was on the rise. Like, I think she'd done a few sort of smaller roles in other movies up until that point, but this was really the one that got her on the map. It was the first time I'd heard about her, but I don't know if it was just her heavy costumes, but or the part that she was playing, but it just seemed like it was very wooden, her acting. I don't know. At first I was thinking that was supposed to be the way that the Queen acted, but it felt very stifling.
Yeah, well, I guess she didn't play the Queen proper for a while, because, I mean, at the start of the movie, they have, like, one of her attendants pretending to be the Queen, I guess, you know, for security purposes, and just being horribly, horribly wooden, and then suddenly she is the Queen, and then she starts acting like the Queen, and her performance goes as wooden as the rest of the thing.
Yeah, it just felt. But then I was thinking towards the end, oh, those headdresses look like they could have been quite heavy. It was one of those situations of, oh, damn, we've created these costumes, she's got to wear them now. Whoops, it's going to influence her performance. But I suppose I'd rank her alongside all the other sort of, even though she had more than a cameo, you know, against all these other sort of you know, spot the big names in there. And it was, yeah, interesting to see her in early part of her career, so. But yeah, it's, well, I suppose there would have been a lot of hype and I suppose in the fan world about this. I don't know, have they been talking for a while before Phantom Menace came out? Like, was there a lot of anticipation for this?
There was. I mean, it was early internet, so a lot of it was through, you know, there was newspaper spreads and a huge thing being made of how it was going to have the first fully CGI main character, which, and of course, ended up being Jar Jar. And yeah, just saying all these wonderful things. I believe there was even a whole thing about how amazing this pod race was going to be. Everything about it was really hyped up. And very little of it met the hype. I probably will touch on this because I do consider him a redeeming feature, and not just because my wife met him at Supernova, he was incredibly nice and signed a picture as both himself and Darth Maul for my son, is Ray Park. I mean, he's probably one of the reasons there is actually enjoyable sections in this movie. So if you don't know Ray Park, he played Darth Maul. He has also been in the X-Men movies where he played Toad alongside Magneto and the bad guys there. And he's not only in there as one of the main bad guys, who is suitably menacing, if bizarre looking, he also choreographed the fight scenes, which is probably what explains why he is just such a more a flamboyant and active and action-packed fighter than anybody else in the movie. I did enjoy watching the Darth Maul fight scenes.
Oh, well, there you go. We've got one of our first redeeming features. Tick.
Yep. Ray Park. Tick.
But that seems to be it. You're sort of spotting, you know, in a movie like this where you're feeling like, oh, it's kind of sinking. You know, you sort of grab for little bits of, you know, familiar faces or really standout performances to kind of get you through it. It just felt to me so long, and then it was building up so much, and then the final scene just kind of was very, not the final scene, sorry, the final battle seemed very quick. But I suppose they did need to. I suppose it was inevitable that part one was going to have this backstory so that action could kick in with part two and part three, which I assume it does.
Yeah. So, oh, that final battle scene where a orbiting spaceship cannot be taken down by a whole squadron of terrain fighters who can't even shoot through its shield, yet one kid who can't fly the starfighter properly manages to crash through a landing bay and take the entire thing out.
Oh, yeah.
Perfectly logical.
Oh, guys. But, you know, this would have been all part of the whole sensationalism of it all. You know, they really, like I said earlier, they would have just thrown everything in they could to try and excite the audience and give them what they wanted. But as you said, it would never really live up to the hype. I believe it made $1.8 billion. That's not million. That's $1 billion at the box office. And I suppose based on, you know, the marketing that would have surrounded and the name that Star Wars had, I could see why that was an achievable goal, but I could see that it might have turned a lot of fans off for subsequent movies.
Yeah, I mean, well, talking about the fandom, of course, over the years, now that we have those full six episodes, alternative viewing orders have come out, and the whole idea is you get through episode 4 and 5 to the big reveal that Darth Vader is Luke's father. Then you cut back to the original trilogy, you see the story of Darth Vader, and then return to episode 6 at the end of it all. And that was considered for a bit, and then some bright spark came up with what was called the machete edit. So called because it completely cut episode 1, The Phantom Menace, out of the list. It just said, skip this movie entirely because, again, so much that happens in it is just contained within the movie itself and is pretty much irrelevant to the rest of the series.
So you don't need to see. So you could pretty much start. I think is it Attack of the Clones? I believe is the second one, isn't it? Yeah. So you could easily start. You know, if you were to watch from the prequels to the, you know, to the original series, could you watch from part two onwards and not feel confused?
Very much so, because again, like I mean, you got Darth Maul, he is only relevant for that very first movie. Jar Jar Binks isn't even relevant for that first movie. He's just pointless. Qui-Gon, he doesn't go beyond the first movie. The whole side plot about the relationships between the humans and the Gungans on the planet of Naboo, no relevance whatsoever to the rest of the series.
Oh, God. It's like they were just kind of gone, we need to, I don't know if it was to make some money almost, we need to capitalize on this Star Wars franchise. We need to come up with a product. And really, it just failed miserably because they, I don't know, hadn't come up with a good story at the time, or maybe they had constraints, or I don't know what it would have been, whether it would have been Lucas himself or 20th Century Fox imposing things. I don't know. I think it might have been a case of too many chiefs and not enough Indians. running the show.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to think now about what is actually relevant going forward. I mean, probably the only thing to come from getting young Anakin out of slavery, and they make a big point that they can only save Anakin and not his mother, is just because there's a scene which isn't even all that long or big in part two, where Anakin does go back for his mother, and it's like there's this turning point moment where the flickers of the dark side start showing through because of what happens there. So essentially, saving Anakin from slavery, but not his mother, is probably one of the probably the most relevant thing that happens in that movie when you're looking at the rest of the series.
Mm. So really, yeah, I can understand why fans would have been very, very disappointed with it.
Yep. Oh, and of course the fact that Queen Amidala, Natalie Portman, is also, like, you know, she's the mother of Luke Skywalker and Leia Skywalker further on. I probably should add a big spoiler warning to the start of this, shouldn't I?
I don't think I intend to watch the next two movies, but I do believe that we've kind of touched on the trilogy too a bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I would be interested to, you know, not that I'm going to go out of my way to see them, but I would be interested to see the follow-up movies, and I would believe that they would get better, or it's improved, or they'd tone down a lot of things. And honestly, anything without Jar Jar, or anything with Jar Jar sort of put to the background, sort of is worth a viewing, possibly. But anyway,
immediate improvement.
Phantom Menace, like, yeah. It really, you know, having, you know, coming in from the only back the background of only seeing, you know, 20 minutes of the 77 film, and this, it really makes you appreciate what they did achieve in the original, you know. And as soon as you add something with computer generated imagery, it just gives you that sort of that lack of warmth. So yeah, it does make you appreciate what they had to work with back when the first one came out.
Yeah, I mean, the original trilogy, I mean, okay, I am a fan, but I'm fully happy to admit that the original trilogy does have its flaws. But what it is just an amazing technical achievement for when it was made. Whereas this one is the result of essentially a committee sitting in front of computers and then putting a few people in front of green screens. It just doesn't have that magic.
Yeah, exactly. But I feel like that with a lot of the films even now. So it's, you know, I think it kind of, yeah, it does make you appreciate what Lucas did with the originals. And isn't it true that some company has bought the rights to Star Wars and will be releasing new films as of next year? Am I correct in thinking that?
Mm-hmm. Well, Star Wars is now owned by Disney, which, of course, created quite a furor at the time, but do remember that also Pixar and Marvel are also owned by Disney, and they're doing fantastic work out there some pretty obscure source material too. So I'm not going to, you know, definitely knock that down, and there is the assurance by J.J. Abrams, who's bringing the next Star Wars movie to us, that he is actually going back and focusing more on using practical effects and actual sets.
So will this be a continuation of the third 80s film? Sorry, I'm not sure of the number.
yeah, so...
Oh, episode 6, sorry.
Yeah, so we've got the original trilogy is episodes 4, 5, and 6. And then you have the prequel trilogy of episode 1, 2, and 3. And then you've got the actual sequel trilogy, I guess you could say, that's not confusing, of episodes 7, 8, and 9.
Okay, so I can understand now. So, did, you know, not having seen the episode 6, did it call for a continuation?
They did wrap it up pretty well, but of course, with anything which garners quite a bit of popularity, there is what's called the expanded universe. A lot of people that sort of came in and tried to work out where certain plot lines or you know, the extension of what happened and where that would go. Of course, Disney/Lucasfilm have said that they're going to disregard a lot of that. even though it is a lot of it was considered canon by the fandom.
Well, you know, I do worry about these new films coming out in the case of sort of like The Phantom Menace, where it was going to, hype's probably not the word, but it's going to have, you know, all this sort of anticipation and people are going to expect so many things of it and it may fall flat. And I do worry that that's going to continue like that in the next three films that are made. But not being a fan, I suppose it's not a worry of mine. But I don't know. I'm wondering if this movie next year will be another Phantom Menace.
I think they probably would have learned a lot from The Phantom Menace, and a lot of what they learned would have been what not to do.
And I suppose, too, we've seen in recent years, especially with, you know, I suppose comic book movies, not the, you know, not the Star Wars is, essentially. But, you know, they've seen how successful these blockbusters go. So I think, too, yeah, they would have learnt a lot, I suppose, and especially ways to market things and also, you know, what to include. And I suppose it's inevitable it would probably be in 3D. So I suppose they would have learnt a lot since 1999. And, hell, that was a long time ago when you think about it, especially in the world of technology. So, yeah, so I suppose I would be interested to see how it pans out, you know, in 2015.
I'll be there in the cinema. I won't be able to help myself.
I know you will be. So I suppose the reaction from the fans leaving the cinema after Phantom Menace would have been quite interesting, especially with these news groups and forums as such and the internet.
Yeah, it didn't take too long for the complaints to start coming through. And I think I remember from the screening I watched, there was a lot of thoughtful silence, I think, on the way out, as people were just trying to comprehend what they'd just seen and what they just paid money to see, essentially do horrible things to their favorite movie series.
Yeah, oh, it would have just been, you know, quite hard to grasp, and yeah, I can understand. And I can assume you could probably hear a pin drop during the movie itself or fits of laughter. I don't know, seeing Jar Jar Binks on the big screen in 1999 would have been quite weird, you know, coming from the background of the movies that they would have been seeing. So,
yeah, I think a lot of the laughter, because I mean, Jar Jar Binks, let's face it, he was meant to be there as comic relief, and a lot of the CGI characters seem to have been set up to be some sort of comic relief. Even the bad guys, droids, army with their mannerism and behavioural way of speaking, it's like aren't these guys meant to be menacing and you're turning them into the joke? And there was laughter in the movies, but I think that was just more like people just going, I've got to do something to enjoy this. I'll just laugh at anything that's even remotely funny.
Yeah, I wonder if it ever got any bad screening, bad movie screenings. I don't know, I wonder if anyone gave it a cult cinema release and promoted it as a bad movie night. I'm sure it was done somewhere.
The probably would be the fact that I guess the Star Wars movies probably, I mean, you try to screen movies. I can imagine that if you decided you wanted to, say, put on The Phantom Menace, it would probably be quite a hard movie to get the rights to screen.
Well, I know that the Star Wars movies in general are near impossible, and I can understand, you know, having watched, you know, the Blu-ray today of Phantom Menace, you know, he wants it to be seen in the most pristine quality, and, you know, fair enough, it's his product, but, you know, it makes it, you know, therefore near impossible to get the rights. So,
yeah.
And Phantom Menace would probably be the last one I'd get the rights for.
Yeah, good point. Well, we probably should, I mean, I mentioned, like, couple, I mean, there's hardly any really to speak of, but I'm just trying to think of any of the other actual redeeming features, which is what we're here for. We've had a good time bagging it out, obviously, and I'll probably just say quickly, you mentioned him before, Samuel L. Jackson. Again, he's actually more relevant in the later movies. His whole appearance in this original one is rather pointless, but I tell you what, actor who can actually put in a decent performance in front of a green screen when he's acting behind what is essentially a computer-generated Muppet. you've got to give him some thumbs up. You've got to give him some kudos.
Oh, definitely.
And actually, that's another thing. The Yoda in this one, he's less convincing as this computer-generated character than he was when he was a puppet going through a foggy marsh in episode 5.
I could just imagine actually when I was watching it thinking, you know, how much of this did they actually see? You know, it would have been, virtually all green screen, I could just imagine.
No, I've seen, like, some making of and stuff, and it's just like, yeah, these people fighting with essentially sticks in front of a green screen.
Oh, gosh. But yeah, so, you know, redeeming features for me would definitely be Spot the Cameo and, you know, a lot of these big names and sort of, you know, see, you know, for me it was a way to sort of keep the movie entertaining, see, oh, who am I going to see next in these roles? And they weren't, you know, all cameos. You know, you had Liam Neeson and Ewan McGregor playing quite big roles. And but, you know, that kind of, you know, to me, I'd say is a redeeming feature. Sort of got you through.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, definitely the good actors were good considering what they were working with. So, yeah. Liam Neeson, Ewan McGregor, Samuel L. Jackson, they did put in, you know, good solid performances. Natalie Portman, until she went all Queenie, was also, you know, not too bad. But when you look at the character that this movie is meant to be the focus of, considering that the entire trilogy is basically how Darth Vader became Darth Vader. Yeah, Anakin just doesn't work.
It just fell flat and he just seemed quite annoying to me. I don't know if it was the actor or the part in general, but that's how it came across to me.
Yeah.
But in terms of other redeeming features, I'd say I don't know this one, but the movie looks great. You know, it looks very good. It's crisp and clear. But that said, I'm assuming you'd watch the others and it'd be the same. It looks great. And I could just imagine seeing it on the big screen, minus all the other horrible things happening. It would have been a great visual feast. So, you know, if you're into that kind of, you know, thing, it definitely looks great, especially to watch on Blu-ray.
Well, I mean, I guess from re-watching this and trying to obviously have the redeeming features in mind, it's just got me thinking that I've really got to check out that machete order for watching the movies that just cuts it all together and actually see how that does work, because I haven't tried it yet, but I'm probably going to have to dedicate a weekend to it sometime soon.
Yeah, oh, you need to do it. Sounds great. Maybe I should do it that way. Might make a bit more sense to me, but I don't think I'm game enough to do it just yet.
Fair enough. Baby steps, Christian.
Yeah, we'll get there.
We'll get there.
So, no, it definitely makes you, I suppose, I don't know, this is also a redeeming feature, but makes you, you know, sort of appreciate the originals, I suppose, too, even though, as you said, they are quite flawed, you know, a bit flawed. But, you know, it does make you appreciate what they were able to achieve back with the original three.
Indeed. And on that moment of thoughtful silence, we probably should wrap this up. For what was going to be a mini podcast, I think we've managed to sink quite a bit of time into it. But that's how it goes. Christian and I are talking about movies.
Yeah, there was stuff to talk about. So, no, well, I'm glad I managed to get to a Star Wars movie at least once in my life so far. But I didn't expect it to be this one. But then knowing my background and sort of bad cinema and my love of sort of bad cinema, maybe it was appropriate for me to have watched this one out of the six.
Absolutely. Well, it's safe to say when you look at the full six movies, this is the low point.
Yeah. So you've been warned, people. Aside from all the spoilers we've given you, you've been warned.
Excellent.
So thank you, Trevor, for suggesting me to get through an entire Star Wars movie. I made it.
I'm here to help expand your horizons and vice versa, obviously.
Maybe with some better titles. So I look forward to seeing what we come up with next for our redeeming features.
Of course. And look, if you out there in listener land have any comments you would like to mention, maybe you're a big Phantom Menace fan and you want to tell us how wrong we are, please let us know. So you can easily find the Rufus Project on Facebook, on Twitter, on YouTube, on Ustream. You can head to the rufusproject.podomatic.com. Hey, you could even leave a review on iTunes giving us a 1-star review for completely misunderstanding the Phantom Menace. You know what? I would love to see that. If anyone wants to do it, I want to see it. But
awesome.
Definitely let us know. And of course, let us know if there's a movie out there that you would like us to try to look at with a slightly different perspective. I don't think we redeemed Phantom Menace all that much. I think this is the one where Christian and I are pretty much in agreement of it's mostly crap with a couple of high points. But you know, you never know. We definitely want to hear your suggestions and where you would like us to go. And particularly if you think that maybe we should do more standalone redeeming features. It seems to be a major part of most of the podcasts. Would you like to see it more as maybe a standalone thing? That's something I've been wondering myself, and I'd love to hear your feedback. Well, Christian, do you have anything so you would like to add?
Nothing at this stage, but I hope people continue to tune in or download whatever you do, and we'll look forward to giving you our next redeeming feature and podcast in the next couple of weeks.
Absolutely. So definitely, like, keep listening. Next fortnight we will be back to the normal podcast, probably with a bit of a bumper news section, since obviously haven't been able to cover the news over here. And we hope that you do tune in and let us know what you think. So I guess from me, I couldn't think of a witty sign out, so feel free to add your own. And Christian. I think we've lost Christian. I think it's a good thing that we're wrapping up the podcast. We have just lost Christian. The joy of live recording. So definitely get us your feedback, get us your suggestions, and we will see you next time. Thanks a lot.
Boy, oh boy, Alamos, Alamos, one is sure. Let me dig that jive some more, boy. Jim Jam Jump is the jumpin' jive. Makes you get your kicks on the mellow side. Hep, hep. Hep, hep. The Jim Jam Jump is the solid jive. Make you 9 foot tall when you're 4 foot five. Hep, hep. Hep, hep. Don't be that igaroo. Get hep and follow through. And get your steady foo. Make the joint jump like the gators do. The Jim Jam Jump is the jumpin' jive. Make you like your break on the Jersey side. Hep, hep. Hep, hep. Jim Jam Jumpin' Jive makes you hep, hep, hep on the mellow side. Boy!
Yeah!
Oh, boy.
Talk to me.
Palomar, Shalomar, Swanee Shore. Let me dig that jive some more. Boy! Jim Jam Jump is the jumpin' jive. Makes you get your kicks on the mellow side. Hep, hep. Hep, hep. The Jim Jam Jump is the solid jive. Make you 9 foot tall when you're 4 foot five. Hep, hep. Hep, hep. Don't be that igaroo. Boy, get hep and follow through. And get your steady foo. Make the joint jump like the gators do. The Jim Jam Jump is the jumpin' jive. Make sure like your brakes on the Jersey side. Hep, hep. Hep, hep. Jim Jam Jumpin' Jive makes you hep, hep, hep on the mellow side.